Welcome to another exclusive podcast from Pituitary World News. This is Jorge Fascinetti. In today's podcast, Dr. Blevins discusses the opioid overdose crisis in America, focusing on the misuse of and addiction of prescription pain relievers, heroin, and synthetic opioids such as fentanyl. Here's Dr. Blevins.
Hello, everyone. Happy New Year to you and yours. This is Dr. Louis Blevins, podcasting from Sausalito, California. Today's topic is a little bit off the beaten path for me with regards to pituitary disorders. It is, however, loosely related to neuroendocrinology. Maybe not so loosely after all. The topic is that of the opiate crisis in America. As you know, the brain has endogenous opioids, produces them. The endorphin system's involved, and opiates do a lot of things in the brain to inhibit things. They actually regulate hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis activity and pretty complex neuronal pathways. I won't get into those now, but so this really is neuroendocrinology. When I was in my fellowship at Johns Hopkins, my mentor, Dr. Gary Wand, excellent physician, focused his research on the neuroendocrinology of addiction and found that people who have addictive personalities, whether it be to opiates, gambling, you name it, have a certain, if you will, phenotype of their endorphinergic system and their responses to stress. So this does have its genesis, I think, in neuroendocrinology. At any rate, I saw a movie last night called Ben is Back, starring Julia Roberts, who I think gave her best performance to date. And it's a story about a mother and a family and society, really, dealing with a son who has returned for Christmas holiday. And he has come from a halfway house where he's under supervision for his opiate addiction and misuse and all sorts of problems that have stemmed from his behavior. The movie does a tremendous job, I think, of exploring the addiction mindset, namely the mindset of the person who has the addiction problem and the addictive personality. It also does a very good job, I think, of illustrating the social drift to a lower socioeconomic class and some of the problems where people violate the laws and rules of society as a consequence of their addiction. And it illustrates the tragic effects that addiction to opiates can have on family and society and our culture. Well, the movie obviously prompted me to do this podcast, but I also wanted to use it as an opportunity to share my approach to the management of pain in patients with pituitary disorders and other endocrine disorders. As I intimated, I did some research in my fellowship looking at these opiate systems in the brain and a lot of reading about those, at any rate, to sort of understand the research that I was doing. And I had come out of my internal medicine training where we use a lot of opiates for different things. You know, we certainly saw occasional patients who had drug-seeking behavior, but if you had kidney stones, you probably got opiates. If you had a fracture, you got opiates. If you had surgery, you got opiates. And those were sort of standards of care in that era. And usually they were given for very short periods of time. And there were few people walking around who were using heroin, but we didn't really see a lot of people abusing prescription narcotics. I used to moonlight in emergency rooms during my residency training and certainly saw people who would come in faking pain and trying to get narcotics. So we knew this was a problem, but it really wasn't much of a problem in the 1980s when I was training. So at any rate, by the time I got out of my fellowship, I decided that opiates weren't something that I was going to prescribe for my patients, because I was a specialist, and if they had pain, they needed to see someone else to manage their pain disorder, usually primary care physician, because as an endocrinologist, I always insisted that patients have a primary care doctor who managed them concurrently with me. So I started my career with these misgivings. A few interesting things happened along the way. The first one was that when I was a junior faculty member, I had a patient who had diabetic neuropathy. It was a real problem with diabetes. And I got a call one day from the pharmacy who asked me if I had written a prescription for narcotics for him. And I says, well, no, I haven't. Why would you ask? And he says, well, two reasons. One, I looked up in the register and I saw that you'd never written a narcotic prescription, as far as I can tell, that was ever filled at our pharmacy. And this guy gets all his medicine at this pharmacy. And suddenly we have a prescription that you wrote is for narcotics. And I just didn't believe it. The second thing was he presented another prescription the next day from another physician for a different narcotic. And I know that physician personally has been dead for 2 years, so I didn't believe him, and I called the police, and they're on the way to arrest this guy for forging prescriptions. So clearly this guy had a problem. Either he had a lot of pain and wanted opiates, or he had an opiate addiction. I don't really know what happened. He was arrested and ultimately went to jail for a while, and I never saw him again. Interestingly, a couple of years ago here in the Bay Area, there was a report of an elderly, grandmotherly type of a woman who was getting prescription opiates from several different pharmacies in the town that she had resided in, and seeing several different physicians and getting those prescriptions from different doctors, taking the prescriptions to different pharmacies to get their refills. They caught up to her because they found an addict with a pill bottle that had her name on it, and that's how they tracked her down and found out basically she was a grandma who was dealing drugs. She would take all these prescriptions and then sell the pills on the streets to support herself, to make a living. So there's a problem there, you know, that with the way the system works. California's gone to some great lengths to try to prevent this sort of thing from happening in the future. But it's another sign of what's going on in society that's trouble. Some for patients who might get a prescription for narcotics and then get addicted afterwards. Recently in the Bay Area, there were three people found dead one morning. I heard about this on the radio driving to work, and these three youths had all died of fentanyl toxicity. Fentanyl being another narcotic that's often used for anesthesia and severe pain, and now there's a big black market for it, and its potency is great, and people are overdosing on this without really intending to do so. So these are just several little examples that I have. Other examples that I have about my practice are that I have a lot of patients ask me for opiates. They'll tell stories like their primary physician's out of town, or they don't answer the phone, or they won't write any more prescriptions, and these folks want prescriptions for opiates from me, and of course I tell them no. The neurosurgeons in my practice will give low doses of opiates for after pituitary surgery, but I don't refill them. I don't prescribe them. It's just my policy to not do that because I don't want to contribute to this problem we have in America. Well, let's talk in detail about that problem, what we as doctors and patients might do about that. So here are the data, and I've got this data from the CDC and also the National Institutes of Health. And clearly they illustrate that the opiate problem in America is a national public health and societal crisis, and we have to do something about it. So it's estimated that 115 people in the United States die every single day as a consequence of overdose of opiates. Far more people dying of opiate overdoses than dying of guns or knives or whatever weapon you might think that someone could employ against another human being. It's estimated that the cost of the opiate problem in the United States is $78.5 billion a year. More statistics about the deaths and the usage. In 2015, there were definitely 33,000 documented cases of people who died of opiates, many of them from not only prescription opiates, but also heroin and fentanyl. It was estimated in 2015 that 2 million people in the United States had a substance abuse disorder related to opiates, another 591,000 substance abuse related to heroin. It's been shown that about 29% of people who are prescribed opiates ultimately misuse them and are at risk to become addicted, whereas about 12% actually do develop a real true disorder of addiction with opiates. So 12%, that's one of eight people prescribed opiates are going to have an addiction problem. I don't like those odds if I'm a patient and someone prescribes me opiates. Interestingly, 6% of people who are given a prescription for opiates transition to heroin. 80% of heroin users previously had abused opiate prescriptions. Overdoses are up 30% in the time from July 2016 to September 2017, and they're up 54% in large cities in 16 states where there's data. So it's estimated that between 1999 and 2017, there were 700,000 deaths due to opiate overdosage. We have data in 2017 that there were 70,000 people who died of drug overdose, and 68% of those died of opiate overdosages. They've also looked at data relating back to prior years and found that the opiate overdose rate in 2017 was six times higher than in 1999. You might ask why, and there are a number of things that have people believe have contributed to this. One of them is that, and I remember this very well, in the 1990s, the drug companies were coming out with these new designer opiates, and they were basically saying that, you know, these drugs are great. You won't get addicted to them if you have pain and need to take them for pain. The people who take them for recreation are going to get addicted and they're going to have problems. But if you have a pain disorder, whether it be arthritis or a knee problem or diabetic neuropathy or whatever, you're not going to get addicted to the drugs. So they promoted them as safe. So prescription rates started to rise. But with that rise in prescription rates, we started seeing opiate addictions and also deaths due to opiate overdosage. In 2010, there was an uptick in the use of heroin, so we started seeing a lot more problems as a consequence of that, and it was people switching to heroin because they needed something more powerful. The way this system works is that you can take opiates, and they'll work for a while, but you change your receptor density in the cells, and then it takes more and more drug to get the same effect. And then you switch to higher potency drugs, and these folks who either get pain relief or euphoria or whatever they're getting are getting that from the drug, and they have to keep going up and up and up on the doses. And ultimately, they end up on doses that are so high that they stop breathing and probably have cardiovascular collapse. And of course, the heroin users, if they survive that, they go to fentanyl, and many people are dying as a result of that in this day and age now. But at any rate, part of the problem is what the drug companies were saying. Another part is that physicians were prescribing it thinking they were safe, but also recognizing it was a way to appease a patient and get a patient who might be complaining of pain or demanding a prescription for opiates out of the office. And I've actually seen that happen in practice of medicine, is that, you know, patients put so much pressure on the physician just writes the prescription and sends the patient on their way. And the others, I think that patients do seek the drug. Now, people don't want to have pain, and they seek the drug to get rid of the pain or to alleviate the pain, but also they become addicted. And there's this thing, there's a difference between addiction and dependency. The dependency is people can actually depend on the drug to feel well, because if they start coming off of the drug, they feel actually horrible. And this point dependency was also pointed out in that movie Ben Is Back, where the Julia Roberts character, who was a mother of the addictive son, gave one of her son's friends some narcotics so that he could actually feel better because he was feeling terrible. So they addressed that whole issue of dependency there as well. And I think that people do become dependent on the drugs. They use them for too long, or they use them in the first place when they weren't truly intended. And then patients become very aggressive with their physicians, family members, etc., to get the drugs. I need the drugs. I need to stay on my opiates or I'm going to feel terrible. And it's a real thing. And it's really the first problem that ultimately leads to the serious issues of addiction and the addictive personality and the potential for death or severe disability as a consequence. It's been shown that people who take longer duration of opiates and at higher doses are at higher risk for addiction, overdose, and death. And the recommendation there is what you can do if you're a patient is consider alternative pain management strategies, alternative therapies, Tylenol, ibuprofen, other related drugs, for example, physical therapy, massage, transcutaneous stimulators, for example. If you have to use opiates, use lower doses for a short period of time and don't use them to feel completely pain-free. They should be used for when pain is only very, very severe and not managed by other types of efforts to alleviate the pain. I think it's also important to see a pain management specialist, you know, primary care physician. Endocrinologists certainly shouldn't be prescribing opiates for anybody. But primary care physicians, maybe, but only if they've had the right training and the right CME to be able to do so safe and effectively. But really, this, with the crisis as severe as it is, this is a problem that I think that if you need opiates, you need to be seeing a pain management specialist who can manage this situation and keep you from getting addicted and keep your pain under control and keep you alive. So I think that's one of the things that we need to do in this society is to really find the experts to manage this particular disorder so that we can prevent tragedy. The other thing that I think patients can do is accept what their physicians say. You know, patients don't like it if a physician doesn't meet the patient's expectations and denies a prescription that a patient desperately is seeking. And you need to understand that sometimes physicians say no because they're looking out for your best interest. And if a physician or someone is concerned about the opiate use that you have, you need to work with them to try to understand that and try to get some expert help to, if you will, detoxify and get these drugs out of your system so you can feel well, and you may find that the pain really isn't there. And it'll take a while sometimes for the psychic pain and the rebound pain, that phenomenon to go away, but usually you can get through that as well. Some of the things that have come out in some of the research looking at opiate addiction is that the populations that are at greater risk are Caucasians, more common in smaller cities and larger cities, mid-sized cities not much of a problem, or not as big of a problem, I should say. It seems that there's more problems with opiate overdosages in areas where there's a higher per capita number of dentists and primary care physicians. I guess dentists are using a lot of opiates for jaw surgery or tooth pulling or whatever, but you know, that's a red flag. You know, if your dentist is writing opiate prescriptions after pulling teeth, you need to be very careful. It also seems to be in areas where there's a low socioeconomic status, unemployment, uninsurance, those populations that seem to be at greater risk. And I don't know why physicians are passing out candy to the uninsured. I say candy because that's, if you've ever seen a patient with a heroin or an opiate addiction, it's candy to them. And I've seen that in emergency rooms when I've worked, and also in the hospital when I've been caring for patients. Because, you know, obviously people who have opiate addictions get pituitary tumors as well, so we see it on occasion. And then also people with diabetes mellitus, arthritis, and various disabilities. And some of those disabilities obviously due to injury. But it's quite common for opiate addiction to take place in the disabled population, probably as a consequence of their injuries. So I bring those things up because it's important to recognize whether you're in a high-risk group. I know some of you are probably sitting and thinking, oh, this guy's full of BS, and what's he know to talk about? I need my opiates. I've got my pain. I have to take these medicines. I couldn't live without them. And, you know, my comment in response to that is that, you know, talk to your doctor, pain management person, because maybe you can't live with them if things get out of hand. And the thing that I have learned in my practice is that opiate addiction can happen to anybody. The addictive neurophysiology and neuroendocrinology does not respect socioeconomic class. Every single one of us has the potential to develop an addiction to opiates when given a prescription for something as simple as postoperative pain or a musculoskeletal injury. So I'll leave you with that and recommend that if you're ever given a prescription for opiate narcotics, don't fill it, don't take them unless you absolutely must have them. Even if you have to brave the pain for a couple of days, it's probably better to do that than end up homeless and on the streets, or even worse, dead prematurely as a consequence of a prescription for a skiing accident injury or something like that. So that's all I have to say on the topic. As usual, please feel free to send us your comments. We like the community. We're here to help you understand things, but we also learn from you as well. So please feel free to comment as you wish. Once again, Dr. Lewis Blevins, podcasting from Sausalito, California. Have a wonderful new year.